must unite what has been set asunder.
We are TFR. Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for tuning in. Once again, it is Friday. We have done it, ladies and gentlemen. We made it to the weekend. I got to tell you, I don't know where you guys are at out there, but here in Missouri, it is beautiful today. It looks like it might hit 60 degrees. It's that kind of weather that might make somebody regret selling their motorcycle a few months ago. I'm not going to lie about that, but I digress. If it's beautiful where you guys are at, I hope you guys are out enjoying some sunshine, or at least plan on enjoying some sunshine. We haven't seen it in a couple of weeks here in Missouri, so I'm really, really happy to report that the weather's very nice. And there's no spraying going on right now. The clouds are gone. It is absolutely crystal clear blue skies out there, and there's no planes up laying poisonous trails. So that's always nice, too, when they give us a day off from all of the poisoning going on. Anyway, this is Red Pill Reports. Thank you guys for tuning in. We are live right now. It is, of course, 10 o'clock Central Time. Today is the 16th day of January. Wow, I thought it was the 15th today. Man, the months are just flying by, aren't they? We're almost halfway done with January already. Or more than halfway done, almost. Jeez. Just absolutely crazy. I want to thank everybody for checking out the website, redpillreports.com. Really appreciate you guys going there and sharing it with your friends. Also, really appreciate those of you who are supporting Truth Frequency Radio. I just cannot tell you how much I appreciate being on this network and how much I like the other hosts. I was just listening to the replay of Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton, and I was laughing the whole time. Those guys, although they're talking about some pretty serious stuff, boy, they make me smile. So I love them as hosts. I love all the other hosts on the radio network as well. So just really appreciate you guys out there that are supporting the network. And those of you guys that hang out in the chat room while I'm on air, love you guys as well. Just letting you know that I do my best to be in the chat room during the show so I can kind of take any advice or criticism from you guys. You can have questions if you have questions for the guests, or if you have comments about any of the news articles, things like that we're going to be covering. That is a fantastic place to do that. You can also listen via the live link at redpillreports.com while we're on the air, and appreciate everybody sharing that with their friends out there. Today, we're going to have a very special guest at the 11 o'clock hour. Mr. Gary Milievsky is going to be on the phone. Of course, he is the founder of Snoopwall. And the head of the company there. He created the company's new technology, which essentially, is a bunch of free apps that you can use to figure out if your phone has been compromised or if your computer has been compromised. And we're also going to be talking today. I think it's pretty fitting since we're only a couple weeks after Christmas. A lot of people getting a lot of new electronic gadgets and gizmos, and, maybe haven't considered exactly how dangerous some of those things can be. The hackers did not take the holidays off, apparently. After speaking with Gary yesterday, it's pretty apparent right now that they have really ramped up their game in terms of creepware and things like that. So anyway, we're going to be talking quite a bit about cybersecurity and how to keep yourself safe and keep your finances secure, things like that, going forward into 2015, because this, he believes, will be the year of the rat. And by rat, he means the creepware Trojan. So we're going to be talking quite a bit about that, how to keep yourself protected there. Anyways, moving on here, let's see, Gary Milievsky, as I mentioned, be on the show at 11 o'clock, and then at the on the Monday show, we're going to have Dr. Dennis Harris joining us. We've been trying to get him scheduled for a little while, but he was ill the last time he was supposed to be on the show, so definitely looking forward to speaking with him on Monday. Anyways, lots and lots of news to cover today. The headlines just kept rolling in overnight. Obviously, the exploitation of the Charlie Hebdo attack is in full swing right now, and the fight against encryption is going to be a motif that we will see going forward for sure. I also believe we have the EU announcement saying that they want to create an EU-wide intelligence agency now, which is obviously going to ramp up the capability of the GCHQ and the NSA and things like that. They want to be able to combine forces again, trying to battle the alleged terrorist threat there. So that's going to be a motif. We also had some pretty major economic news breaking yesterday out of Sweden. Out of Switzerland. So we're going to have to talk about that too, because that was something that nobody expected. It has obviously caused a little bit of turmoil in the economic markets. So we will get to that probably in the second segment of the news hour today. Let's jump into some national or some international news, as it were, here. I'm trying to figure out what's exactly going on around the world right now. The report out of the Middle East is that Saudi Arabia has completed the 600-mile wall at the Iraqi border. This is according to The Telegraph, just reporting yesterday that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has completed the construction of a 600-mile east-to-west wall at the Iraqi border in order to separate itself from Iraq. Okay, and that this border is from the western border town of Turyif to the Saudi-Jordanian border. Turyef is on the Saudi-Jordanian border, and then this wall goes all the way to Hafar al-Batin, which is a town in the northeastern region. So this is a pretty impressive-looking fence as well. This is a fence and ditch. It's a wall. It has 40 watchtowers, 5 layers of fencings, sand embankments, radar systems, camera installations, and they haven't actually said how much the cost of this program was, but they have now completed this 600-mile wall to separate themselves from Iraq. So interesting stuff going on there. Just saying that, Saudi Arabia, we had the story yesterday that ISIL had started to kind of test the borders there pretty dramatically. And Saudi Arabia obviously has had this plan in effect for quite a while now, if they were able to now complete 600 miles of this wall. So it's always interesting to see what's going on in the Middle East and seeing whether or not they're going to be dividing the region. There's been a lot of indication out of Israel for the last 20 years that the target goal with Iraq was to split it up into 3 regions. And those reports go all the way back to like 1982. You can find those online by looking pretty easily. But Turkey does not seem to be going along with that plan. He actually, the Turkish prime minister came out just yesterday as well, and he said that an independent Kurdish state in northern Iraq would pose a threat to the region and turn it into a mess, according to him, and the border change would bring wars upon neighboring countries. So Turkey right now kind of throwing their weight into the ring here and saying that they do not support the fracturing of Iraq or the development of an independent Kurdish state. In reference to the Kurds of Turkey, the prime minister there said that everyone in Turkey has the right to participate in the political process. And he says that all communities in Turkey are satisfied right now with their political system. Obviously, that's not necessarily true. But over the past 12 years, he goes on to say that he has that they've met the wishes of the people. They have changed their educational system to allow use of the Kurdish language on the Turkish side of private schools. And they said they will continue to remove barriers from using the Turkish language there or the Kurdish language there in Turkey. So just kind of interesting that, again, there's been a lot of conjecture about Israel really wanting to see Iraq be segregated into 3 different communities there, and Turkey coming out now with a pretty strong indication that they do not want that to happen and are going to work against that. So fairly interesting time still in the Middle East right now. Moving into the UK, in reference to this very large pedophile case that's being broken all across the world right now, I want to make sure that people remember this story, because I think that this story is, they're going to do everything they absolutely can to keep this thing under the rug. And especially with the connection between Epstein and Clinton, it's really important that people pay attention to this, because obviously, Hillary is going to be running for president here soon. And with a connection to somebody like Bill, without people paying attention to that and just having it driven into their head over and over and over again, there's an awful chance that Hillary might win. We don't want that. So anyway, the sex slave diary has now been published. This is the diary of the young lady, Virginia Roberts, who is the person right now named in the lawsuit who is accusing Prince Andrew and his purported, we'll say, pedophilia friends there all over the world. It's essentially, she has produced a diary at this point, and in it there are 24 handwritten pages in which she alleges that Prince Andrew was paid essentially by Jeffrey Epstein to have sex with Prince Andrew, as well as a number of his friends, some very prominent people. So anyway, the names are coming out. The lawsuit is still going forward, and she is naming names. And again, this sex slave diary, if you want to call it that, has been printed on Radar Online, and you can find a link to that through the news story Sex Slave Diary, which is at redpillreports.com under the show section. And then you can read her handwritten allegations against Prince Andrew there. Just want to make sure people don't forget about this, because I think that's a pretty important story. Okay. Another unusual story. Obviously, times are strange in Paris right now, but several people were taken hostage by an unknown gunman at a post office in Columbus, which is a northwest suburb of Paris, according to the media there. And after negotiations, this assailant apparently handed himself over to police. But the gunman was armed with a Kalashnikov rifle, another gun, and numerous grenades. So the radio reports there said from 2 to 5 people were taken hostage. And then the incident took place at about 1200 GMT. After negotiations with the assailant began, reports emerged that an unknown number of hostages were released, and then the gunman eventually surrendered to police. They say that no one was injured in the incident. But the question that I've got, A, is where are these people in France coming up with Kalashnikovs all of a sudden, plus extra guns and plus grenades? Like, I don't really understand. You know, they're saying that this isn't connected to the Paris shooting that took place, obviously, last week. But again, just some random people taking hostages in Paris with Kalashnikovs. It's got to kind of raise the ire of concern there a little bit, in my opinion. But anyway, that happened. Nobody hurt, apparently. So good news on that front. But Paris still absolutely under siege right now. And in more fallout from that attack that went down in Paris, authorities in Spain are now warning people to be on a lookout for anyone who might be acting suspiciously or who might be of Arabic appearance. As well as being of Arabic appearance, people who are carrying video cameras or brandish a lot of cash in tourist areas. This is all part of a new counterterrorism strategy being waged by the authorities there in Spain, according to the Spanish Daily 20 Minutes. And the police will be examining passports now to check travel histories, and people on the internet are starting to wake up to this reality in Spain. The pilot program is only working in the Andalusia region right now, but the new regulations are expected to be introduced in other areas, with priority given to those with large Arab populations, like Catalonia and the Madrid area. The North African enclaves of Melilla and Ceuta are also at the top of the list. Now, travelers to and from Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia will all face extensive checks, with particular attention being given to Algerian arrivals, known there as being North African terrorist threats, as far as the Spanish are concerned anyways. And individuals carrying more than 1,000 euros in cash will be also under greater suspicion as possible couriers. And the dead French terrorist Koulibaly's girlfriend was believed by police to have been a money carrier, which is why they're now looking for people who have relatively small amounts of cash in terms of our standards, but only $1,200 American will get you in the suspicion category in Spain right now. But the new measures do not end there. Police will also be stopping Arabs with laptops for inspection. Those driving cars will also receive particular attention, and authorities will also gather CCTV footage from popular tourist areas, along with airports and other travel hubs. So the crackdown on being Arab in Spain is well underway right now, and as well as a whole slew of other ancillary categories that may land you in the suspicious category over there. Things like having a laptop or driving a car or traveling from Algeria. Also things to be on the lookout if you're in Spain right now, I suppose. And then in more crackdown type news, I guess you could call it that, Pakistan has, in a move described by experts has undergone a paradigm shift in its security policy as Pakistan plans to ban 12 additional terrorist groups, including notorious Jamaat-ud-Dawa and the Haqqani Network, which Islamabad has long been reluctant to clamp down on. This decision, obviously, to base or to ban the organizations is to be formally announced in the next few days, according to the Express Tribune there. With this latest ban, the number of outlawed groups in Pakistan will reach a staggering number of 72. That's a lot of groups that are not allowed to convene in Pakistan. Initially, the current trend to sweep out the branches of terrorist organizations was triggered by the monstrous Taliban attack on the school in the Peshawar on December 16th. It resulted in the death of 145 people, more than 130 of whom were children, reminding everybody also that Noah Posner among the dead there at the Peshawar attack there in Pakistan. Anyway, the reaction of Islamabad has been prompt and brutal as authorities put an end to the death penalty moratorium introduced in the country back in 2008 and improved a wide-ranging national action plan against terrorism. And as soon as the moratorium on capital punishment was lifted, Islamabad said it plans to execute hundreds of captive Islamist militants held in the country's jails. And then Pakistan's political leaders decided to amend the constitution to form an alternative military court system that will swiftly try alleged terrorists and extremists. So bad timing right now to be a terrorist in Pakistan, but they are clamping down. Again, I think we're going to see that clamp down continuing all around the planet right now. And whether or not you believe that Hedbo attack was real or not, the effects are certainly going to be real. So information coming out about the U.S. and Cuba trade embargo supposedly, allegedly, going to be lifted as of today, implementing new major changes this week in the longstanding trade and travel restrictions between the neighboring nations. New policies announced by the Obama administration on Thursday this week are expected to allow American travelers contained in 12 categories to travel to Cuba without applying for specialized licenses, which will hopefully alleviate restrictions. And those restrictions have largely excluded the U.S. public from the island for more than 50 years. And in addition to easing travel restrictions, The Hill reported that the changes from the Department of Treasury and Commerce will allow travelers to bring back to the U.S. upwards of $400 worth of goods, including $100 in alcohol and tobacco products, such as Cuban cigars. And if anybody is planning on going down to Cuba to get cigars, please send me an email because I will give you a money order to pick me up some. According to Politico, the measures will facilitate travel to Cuba for authorized purposes, facilitate the provision by travel agents and airlines of authorized travel services, and the forwarding of certain entities of authorized remittances, raise the limits on generally authorized certain categories of remittances to Cuba, and allow U.S. financial institutions to open correspondent accounts in Cuba financial institutions. This will hopefully facilitate the processing of authorized transactions, authorize certain transactions with Cuban nationals outside of Cuba, and allow a number of other activities related to, among other arenas, telecommunications, financial services, and trade and shipping. Anyway, the embargo with Cuba does appear to have finally ended. A reminder also that Cuba did release 53 political prisoners as part of last month's deal between Havana and Washington. So following suit on what they said that they were going to do, I would really like to go to Cuba. I think it would be absolutely beautiful there, and it would be very cool to go down and check it out. So anyway, if anybody wants to schedule a group trip, count me in. I'd like to go. Breaking news from the DR Congo. Also, Malawi troops are being trained right now by British forces for a major UN operation in the DR Congo. The UN is to train troops for a major peacekeeping operation in the Democratic Republic of the Congo to neutralize Rwandan armed troops. Apparently, the team of around 20 soldiers from Northern Ireland are about to deploy to Malawi in Southeast Africa and lead the training operation ahead of international troop deployments to the DR Congo. Malawi defense forces are aiming to take control of parts of the country. The UN Security Council called for immediate military action in the DR Congo to neutralize Rwandan armed groups that threaten civilians in the eastern part of the country. The UN mission to the DR Congo said the government troops and peacekeepers were intensifying deployments towards rebel positions. DR Congo's army and a 3,000-strong South African, Tanzanian, and Malawian UN intervention force is due to launch an offensive against the Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, or the FDLR, rebels in the coming months. So, again, more troops from the UN, I'm sorry, more troops from Britain at the request of the UN going to train Malawi troops in the DR Congo there. So Africa quickly becoming a hotbed of military activity. And I think probably the resources there are the main draw for that. We've seen China moving quite a bit of their quote-unquote peacekeeping troops to the area also. It's always funny to see how many of these peacekeeping troops show up, and then you'll have a war break out. But anyway, NATO has done something kind of interesting here with Lithuania. And Lithuania has now printed instructions for its citizens in the case or the event of a Russian invasion, essentially, is what it is. So they published a manual which advises its citizens on how to survive a war on its soil. So some of the advice, not too bad, really. It says, keep a sound mind, don't panic, and don't lose your clear thinking. Gunshots outside your window are not the end of the world. I don't know if I'd feel confident if my government sent me a 100-page public information packet that had advice like that, saying, you know, gunshots outside your window, not really the end of the world. But anyway, the Lithuanian defense minister unveiled the 100-page public information pamphlet last Tuesday at a press conference in Vilnius. And the book, How to Act in Extreme Situations or Instances of War, is the name of the publication. It aims to educate the country's citizens on what to do in the case of an invasion. The manual instructs Lithuanians on how to act during the organization of civil resistance, but also how to act under battlefield conditions, in addition to containing information on governmental changes following a declaration of war and procedures for evacuating a building. The book suggests demonstrations and strikes, or at a very minimum, doing your job worse than usual. I love that. As a means to resisting a foreign occupation. So just go to work, but do a really crappy job, is essentially what he's saying. It kind of harkens back to this advice that the Alabama principals were giving to their students, requesting that the students bring 8-ounce cans of food, like beans and corn, to throw at an armed assailant should one pop into your classroom there. But I thought that was really funny. So he's just saying, you know, as part of your resistance to this occupation and the occupying force, go ahead and go back to your job, but just do it really badly. So anyway, he says the project, which is a collaboration between the defense ministry and Lithuania's fire brigade, was prompted by Russia's reoccurring aggression against its neighbors presently in the Ukraine. Copies of the pamphlet are to be distributed to libraries, secondary schools, and non-governmental organizations, but an online version will also be available for download from the defense ministry's website. So maybe worth reading. I don't know. I guess if you're in Lithuania. But you know what that tells me, though, again, thinking about all the troop movements that we've seen in the Baltic region lately, is that they're not backing down from the idea that there could be some sort of war. And I believe that there are probably enough nefarious forces out there trying to foment war that they could see it. They could definitely see it. So maybe if you're at least in Lithuania and listening to the show, first of all, thank you for listening from Lithuania. And second of all, maybe download that and check it out. Because, you know, one of the things that's in that pamphlet is information about the changes that would go down in the government should they declare war, should they be under siege. And, you know, that could stem down to just some pretty simple information, you know, how to get money, if there's going to be planned rolling blackouts, any kind of thing like that that is going to change that you can see coming, will allow you to get your plans more in shape. And I think that anything you can do like that, I'm actually thinking of reading it myself just to be on the good side of right there, just in case they're pointing things out that I hadn't thought of yet. I want to move over into Wales, too, which is obviously in the UK. They have reported that there was, in fact, a racially motivated machete attack that just took place. A white gentleman seriously injured an Asian man at a Tesco supermarket while shouting white power, according to police and witnesses there. Supermarket shoppers there in Mold, Wales, were forced to evacuate on Wednesday afternoon when the incident, thought to be a racially motivated attack, took place. Witnesses claim the attacker was carrying a machete in one hand and a hammer in the other when he targeted a 24-year-old Asian male who remains in the hospital after suffering quote-unquote life-changing injuries, according to police. And the 25-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. Pretty interesting stuff still going on around the world. Wales, that's a fairly small community there. And the fact that you see a racially motivated attack there, especially via machete and hammer. I mean, that guy's obviously not a stable individual, but bad stuff. And my thoughts and prayers obviously go out to that poor guy that was injured in that attack. Crazy world that we live in, ladies and gentlemen. Let's move on to some national news right now because there is plenty of it. Obviously, hot on the mainstream media right now is the story about this Ohio young man who was supposedly threatening to harm people in Washington, kill lawmakers, and blow up parts of D.C., things like that. Well, his dad's kind of come out on the mainstream news also saying that there's absolutely no way that could have happened because his kid was just not like that. So the father coming on the news last night and saying essentially what we said yesterday, nurtured event. You know, this guy talking about his son saying, you know, my son had $1,200 in his bank account and now all of a sudden he's accused of having a couple $2,000 rifles. Where did he get them? Where did he get the money for that? Obviously, you know, the guy was nurtured by the FBI. They know for a fact that he met with the FBI on a number of occasions. And that's how these events always seem to go down. You know, the FBI will point all this stuff out and then they'll say, oh my gosh, we foiled another plot that we were fomenting in the background. Anyway, we're going to get back in just a few minutes to talk about that. We've got to go to a break. But just keeping you guys in the loop on stuff that we're going to cover in the next segment, we are going to talk about, this very big move from the Swiss Central Bank. That's, going to be in the economy news for, quite a while, in my opinion. So we got to talk about what happened there. Got some more fallout from the retail industry and the retail apocalypse that's going on right now. And I tell you, there's a really cool tech article about a startup in the Netherlands that is getting their power from someplace that I won't even believe. So keep it here. We're going to talk about all that and more in the next news segment. We've got a 3-minute break, guys. Keep it right here. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp U.S. USA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hempusa.org.
Sound Doctrine Ministries with Kenneth Emmanuel.
Sunday on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys for stopping by and making this part of your daily dose of deprogramming. My name's JD. We are still live right now. It is the 16th day of January, and we're still in the news segment of our show. I'm having a little technical difficulty with the chat room, so you guys will have to bear in mind, those of you in there who are trying to say something to me, keeps kind of kicking me out. So I'm doing my best, and appreciate all of you guys who are in there, because I do really, really like the interaction. The whole point of the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast is to create a forum for which you guys can learn from our guests, and I can learn along with you, because I'm really not that smart. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here on Truth Frequency, to be able to interact with all you wonderful listeners out there, and to see you guys in the chat room. Just warms my heart, and I love it. Anyway, getting back to this national news right now, of course, the father of the young man in Ohio stepping up, saying, you know, this was a nurtured event. The FBI obviously coddled my son into doing this stuff and filling his mind full of garbage. Par for the course, you know. Of course, that's what happened, and I'm glad to see at least that storyline getting a little bit of mainstream media coverage, because, again, I don't believe that the FBI has yet to foil an actual organic terrorist threat. So, again, the guy has great questions. Where did the money for the guns come from? You know, obviously that money came from somebody who was wanting this young man to have those weapons. So, again, a coddled event, or a nurtured event is the way that I would say that. Some news out of Oklahoma, in Ouachita County there. Officials have confirmed that the chief of police in Sentinel, Oklahoma, was shot multiple times while investigating a bomb threat Thursday morning. This is an interesting story. I want you guys to hear this. So classes have been canceled at the Sentinel Public Schools due to the threat, so they did not open the schools today there. But according to the mayor of Sentinel, a bomb threat was called into the Community Action Center, which is the Head Start program, early on Thursday morning. And as a precaution, the Sentinel Public Schools canceled all their classes, right? Okay. So, according to the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation, the suspect called 911 at about 4 o'clock in the morning and identified himself. He told dispatch that there was a bomb in the school and that he would detonate it at a certain time. The Ouachita County Sheriff's Office then called the Oklahoma Highway Patrol's bomb squad to check for an explosive device at the school. But in the meantime, the authorities were able to determine where the call came from. So about 6 o'clock in the morning, Sentinel Police Chief Lewis Ross and two sheriff's deputies went to a home in the 200 block south of 4th Street there, okay? Officers entered the home and cleared the first room, but as they entered the second room, a man identified as Dallas Horton shot Chief Ross 3 times, twice in his bulletproof vest and once in the arm. The OSBI said that the chief actually borrowed the bulletproof vest from one of the deputies just before going into the home. And after firing a number of shots, Horton surrendered himself to the other officers. This is where it gets weird to me. Okay, so OSBI officials say that no officers fired their weapons during the incident, right? So this guy opened fire on the officers as they came into his home, and they didn't shoot him back, right? So they took him and his wife into custody for questioning. They did apparently find some type of explosive device in the home. However, the OSBI said Horton will not be arrested at this time. He was taken in to investigative detention after the shooting. For the last several hours, they said they have extensively interviewed him, but facts surrounding the case lead agents to believe that Horton was unaware that it was officers who were making entry into his home. So he's been released from police custody. So they came into his house, he shot a cop 3 times, right? and said, I didn't know you guys were cops, after they'd already cleared the first room. So we're correct. You know, we'd have to assume then that they didn't announce that they were police officers, which would be hard to believe given the fact that the chief of police was not a rookie. He's been on the force there for something like 16 years. And the fact that they found explosive devices in his home, but they released him from custody. That just boggles my mind. I don't understand. So obviously more to this story than we're being told, in my opinion. I don't know what you guys think about it, but if you have an opinion about it, please hit me up in the chat room or send me an email or whatever. I just think that is bizarre. The first female to serve aboard a Navy fast attack submarine has now reported for duty on the USS Minnesota. She is one of the first six officers expected to join the fast attack crews in the months ahead. Obviously, there's been a lot of shuffling going on in the Navy. They, I think back in 2011, they decided they were going to start allowing female officers to be on Virginia-class submarines, and I believe that they are still moving forward to allow them onto the Ohio-class submarines as well. So depending on which way you feel about that, it doesn't bother me at all. I think if you're competent enough to become an engineer on a submarine, you should be allowed to work on a submarine if that's what you'd like to do. I think if I had had the opportunity to go back again, submarine school would have been something I would have liked to have done. Let's see here. What else? Chipotle has decided to stop. They have yanked beef essentially out of about three quarters of their restaurants around the country because they found out that their supplier might have been treating their animals inhumanely. I think that is absolutely outstanding maneuver here. Chris Arnold, who's a spokesman for the Mexican food chain, of course we're talking about Chipotle restaurants here, he told the Associated Press that the company learned about inhumane treatment during a recent audit of its suppliers, and according to Chipotle's policies, all of their suppliers must raise their animals in humane conditions with regular access to the outside. And these guidelines are to avoid suppliers who use factory farming methods. And unfortunately, it was discovered that the pork supplier kept their pigs in tight pens and were restricted from the outdoors. Arnold goes on to tell Reuters that it's hard to say how long this is going to last. They said that they could fill their shortfalls with conventionally raised pork, but the animal welfare standards will fall well short of their requirements, and they simply are not going to make that compromise. Which is really rad. So it's unfortunate, though, because a lot of the experts in the industry are saying that Chipotle is going to have a very difficult time finding a supplier that actually does treat its animals humanely. But if more, you know, organizations, large restaurants like this start laying down the gauntlet, perhaps the industry will respond and we'll see some changes industry-wide there. So I really applaud Chipotle for doing that. There's a couple that is facing an investigation from CPS because they allowed their children to walk home. Essentially, that's the long and the short of it. They have a 10-year-old son and a 6-year-old daughter, and they let them walk home from a park. It's about a 1-mile walk on a Georgia Avenue there. And so now they're being investigated for neglect because they allowed their kids to walk home. I'll tell you what, when I was young, I used to walk to and from elementary school. I was way farther than a mile. And can't even imagine that letting these kids walk home could be detrimental to them. Obviously, there's a lot of sick people out there, but you got to stop being a helicopter parent. You have to let your children go out and explore and, you know, set their own limits a little bit, because unless they push those limits, they're never going to see what they're capable of. And I think a 10-year-old, especially a 10-year-old boy who's walking with his sister, totally capable. If you can see a mile, totally capable of walking home. Completely ridiculous that they're being investigated by CPS now. Want to bring up another quick point here. We talked quite a bit yesterday about Ross Ulbricht's case. He's obviously the guy that's on trial right now as the alleged head of the Silk Road. Prosecutors are attempting to make the connection that he was in fact the Dread Pirates Roberts, which was a person who was represented there on the Silk Road and somebody who sold drugs and things like that. But anyway, you might notice that you're walking around New York out front of the Manhattan courthouse where this trial began on Tuesday. There are a lot of placards going up around the city right now talking about jury nullification. And that's an issue that I think a lot of people probably don't know about and probably should know about. So what is jury nullification? Well, very quickly, jury nullification is a right that we all have as jurors that they lie to us about and tell us that we don't have. And essentially what it comes down to is that you have the right to judge the law before you judge the man. And so we're seeing a lot of jury nullification style events taking places in places like Montana and New Hampshire. Montana has not been able to convene a jury against marijuana possession there for a number of years because simply the jurors decided that they were not going to prosecute anybody because the law was unjust. So that is essentially your right as a juror to first judge whether or not the law itself is applicable or it should be applicable in any circumstance before you then judge whether or not the person on trial is guilty of breaking the law. So that is actually one of the key checks and balances to our legislative and judicial branch, but it's something that they will not tell you about. And I guarantee if you go get tapped for jury duty and you go in and ask the judge during the selection process if he is going to be instructing the jury about jury nullification, well, I would imagine that your jury duties will end very, very quickly if you're not arrested for contempt for even bringing up such an idea as jury nullification. But hopefully some of the people who are going in to be sitting on this jury with the Ross Ulbricht case are well aware of jury nullification, and perhaps we can see something happen in terms of that. There's a homeless guy arrested in Sarasota. I just want to bring this story up because it seems like with a lot of media attention, we can start making these ridiculous situations go away. But a homeless man was just arrested, spending the night in jail on Sunday because police claimed that he was charging his cell phone in a public picnic shelter. And apparently this is a very serious arrestable crime down in Sarasota, Florida. So Darren Kersey, who is 28, he was charged with theft of utilities after he was spotted charging his cell phone at Gillespie Park by Police Sergeant Anthony Frangioni. Since he was unable to come up with the $500 of bail, Kersey had to spend the night Sunday behind bars. Frangioni claims that he told Kersey that theft of city utilities will not be tolerated during this bad economy. And Circuit Judge Charles Williams threw the case out first thing Monday morning because, well, it's not really a real law, and he made it up, and it actually lacked any legal justification to make the arrest. But again, I don't know why, but it always seems like these people that are doing this stuff are not rookies. This is another sergeant, 14-year veteran of the Sarasota Police Department there, and Captain Paul Sutton is said to be reviewing the arrest, in which the American Civil Liberties Union also appears to now be interested in. The Sarasota Herald Tribune reported that back in 2006, Sarasota was deemed the meanest city by National Law Center, and this National Law Center was taking a poll on the treatment of homeless people and people who experience extreme poverty there in the city. So Sarasota named back in 2006 as the meanest city in America in terms of the treatment of its homeless people. So there you go. Arrested for charging his cell phone in public, ladies and gentlemen. There you go. The Dow is up right now, 68 points, it looks like. So 17.384. Happy days might be here again. Not really sure. Crude oil kind of coming up just a little bit, 47.56, which is about a 3% gain on the day. Gold has been absolutely meteoric over the last 5 days, up another 0.5% today to $1,272. That is absolutely huge. Sorry, just looking at a comment in the chat room. You can't feed the homeless in Florida. I'm not sure if it's Florida wide. I know that homeless feeding Florida fiasco, if you can say that three times fast, was in not Sarasota. Where was that at? Fort Lauderdale. That was in Fort Lauderdale, Bad Wolf. Yes, the treatment of homeless people in Florida obviously still not improving. Anyway, gold up, as I mentioned today. Silver following suit with a 3% rise today, $17.56 for the shiny silver metal there. Let's see. The FX market volatility is pretty much at an insane levels right now. Liquidity in the S&P 500 E-mini futures contracts is at the lowest rate that we have seen in 3 years, which another way of saying prepare for more volatility. I'm surprised we're not seeing a lot of volatility in trading this morning so far, because futures were down about 100 points before the market opened this morning. Let's see here. There has been a new gold deal coming out of China. Shanghai is looking to set a bullion-free trade zone there. So the World Gold Council, or WGC, and the Shanghai Gold Exchange signed yesterday a memorandum of understanding to develop a Shanghai free trade zone for bullion, and also hoping to encourage foreign participation in China's tightly controlled gold market. So what does that mean? What are the behind-the-scenes meanings of that? What does it mean that China is now going to be lightening the restrictions on foreigners participating in the gold market there? Well, I think that has something to do with a gold-backed currency moving into the BRICS. I think that there's a lot going on in the economy that we don't know about, and I really do think that decoupling from the dollar is going full steam ahead, and I believe that around the world we're starting to see these new exchanges being set up so that people can operate outside of the dollar more effectively. So I think that's probably what is going on there. Copper has been taking a pretty big hit this week as well. It's been down. It's down actually about 10% just from Monday. Anybody out there who collects copper might care about this. It was able to contain its losses to single digits as of late trading on Wednesday. But copper, again, being down almost 10% since Monday. Let's talk about this whole Switzerland deal that happened, because, again, this was a absolute shocker. Nobody saw this coming. And what actually happened? Let's talk about that. So, okay, yesterday, the Swiss National Bank essentially removed the cap that they had in place to prevent the Swiss franc from rising too high against the euro. So Switzerland has had a very long reputation for having an incredible, stable financial system, right? Everybody knows about Switzerland's legendary banks, right? In 2011, during the scariest times for the eurozone, the country's safe haven status turned the nation into an island of tranquility. Money poured into it from elsewhere in the eurozone as investors sought a safe place to park their cash. Of course, with everyone wanting to have their money in Switzerland, the franc exploded in value. And in early 2010, one franc was less than 0.7 euro, but by the middle of 2011, the franc was nearly at parity against the euro, which is a massive move in a very short amount of time. And countries typically don't like it when their currencies zoom like that. The most obvious reason is that it's very bad for domestic exporters, whose goods become less competitive abroad. So I'm looking into getting a couple of Swiss watches right now. Just hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Switzerland is known for its high-value exports, again, such as watches, pharmaceuticals, and so a surging currency is not helpful. There are also other reasons related to financial system plumbing that create a problem for a country when a huge slug of foreign cash comes rushing in. We also saw just a couple of weeks ago Switzerland announcing the negative interest rates on their short-term, their short-term bank accounts that they had there for businesses that parked more than $1 million there for, I think, less than 10 days. They put a negative interest rate on and apparently didn't do exactly what they wanted it to do, so maybe interest rates need to be more negativer, I guess. But without any hint that this was going to happen, the bank removed this cap. And again, so back in summer 2001, the Swiss National Bank announced a cap on the exchange rate between the euro and the franc. The euro was not going to be allowed to weaken below 1.2 against the franc, so $1.20. The bank maintained the cap by printing francs on a regular basis to buy euros in the market to ensure that the currencies wouldn't breach that line, and the cap held without a hiccup for more than 3 years. So without a hint that this was going to happen, the bank removed that cap yesterday. So why did they do that? Well, it's pretty apparent that they wanted to get out from underneath having a whole bunch of euros in their balance sheets right now. Obviously, with the potential Greek exit from the euro coming up in 9 days, and the threat that seems to be burbling below the surface of the euro, the threat from the ECB being that of their first round of official quantitative easing, that would have made it way more difficult. They would have had to purchase way more euros to keep that peg in place, to keep it connected to the euro. And I believe they just decided that it wasn't worth doing it anymore. So, in a note to clients, Societe Generale currency strategist Kit Jukes explains that the SMB came to the conclusion that it did not make sense for it to keep on an endless path of buying more and more and more euros just to keep the currency down, right? So, and that perhaps the bank felt that all the euros it was accumulating on its ballooning balance sheet were becoming a liability. And again, the European Central Bank is seemingly on the verge of launching its own quantitative easing program, which could put more downward pressure on the euro and force further increase the cost of holding that peg. So essentially, they gave up on that yesterday. And whether whether or not you think it was a good idea or a bad idea, what is apparent is that a lot of people were kind of hurt by this yesterday. There's some pretty big ramifications in Eastern countries. A lot of people there have their mortgages denominated in francs, and those mortgages just became a whole lot more expensive. And this is obviously still more turmoil at a time when the financial markets are experiencing a level of volatility that we haven't really seen in a while. And the collapse in commodities has already caused a lot of pain. So now this next kind of out-of-the-blue move is going to add more stress to the system. So it'd be eager to see what happens there. But again, you know, when a central bank makes a move like this out of nowhere and doesn't even let the other central banks know what is going on, it starts to make me wonder if we're seeing some infighting, if we're really starting to see some of these power centers struggling to maintain control and kind of, it's going to be every man for themselves, I believe, here going forward into the future in the economic system. So the franc did soar against the euro yesterday, and the Swiss stocks plunged by more than 13% as a result of this whole Swiss franc euro floor being announced by the central bank. And after appreciating more than 30% by mid-afternoon, the franc was nearly on par with the euro and rose as much as 14% against the dollar yesterday. So again, lots of people saying, what in the world just happened? The head of the Swatch Group on the news yesterday saying, I am completely at a loss for words, have no idea what we're going to do now. The value of Swatch shares dropped by 14% by noon yesterday. So again, the people there producing very fine goods in Switzerland, might be a good time to hop into the Swiss watch market. Just saying, anybody looking for a late Christmas present for J to the D over here, looking at a Tudor, if you guys know what that is. Anyway, Radio Shack has now warned, they did warn back in November that they might need to file for Chapter 11. It does appear that they are going to be doing that. They're discussing a deal with a private equity firm right now to buy its assets out of bankruptcy, and if that does not work, the company could go to bankruptcy court instead. Potential lenders who could fund operations during the bankruptcy proceedings are also kind of in the mix right now, adding that there is a lot in the flux. So back in November, the company reported that it only had enough member to pay for operations in the very near term. The Fort Worth, Texas company has been struggling to keep up with online retailers for some time, and the 94-year-old chain has been combating the competition by revamping its offerings, closing stores, cutting costs, and changing management. Despite that attempt to claw its way back, the retailer has posted losses for the last 11 quarters. So, earlier this week, MarketWatch reported that the Solis Capital offered Radio Shack a $500 million loan to fund operations during the bankruptcy, but the offer was unsolicited and did expire yesterday. No word as to whether or not they took them up on that or not, but Radio Shack, amongst many of the retail stores that are having a lot of trouble right now, Target, we mentioned yesterday, but they are going to be giving up on their Canadian market completely. They're closing 133 stores and cutting loose more than 17,000 employees. They said yesterday they could not see how they could keep losing or how they could stop losing money before at least 2021 and its first international expansion. And the closing links Target with a series of other retailers who have learned the hard way that the northern border is a very tough one to cross. So again, Target getting ready to close 133 stores after only a couple of years making a go at it in Canada and cutting way back on their employee base there. So there you go. I want to talk a little bit about this Dutch company. I saw this come across the news wire, and I thought this was just absolutely amazing. So this Dutch company is now harvesting electricity from plants. They are powering streetlights, cell phones, and Wi-Fi. And we're taking the potato clock, the humble potato clock, up to, it's like potato clock 2.0, ladies and gentlemen. This company is called Plant E. It is a startup company in the Netherlands, and it's created promising new technology which harvests electricity from plants. And so far this month, more than 300 LED lights were illuminated by the Dutch company in a promising proof of concept. They also demonstrated that they could power up cell phones and Wi-Fis. Man, I think this is super duper duper cool. Wouldn't it be amazing if we turn back to the planet to provide electricity for us? I just think that is super duper cool. Now again, they're not as far along as they would like to be. They're obviously not able to power cities and houses and things like that, but they do believe that the technology is there at this point, and they are going to be working at putting technology in places like China, where large-scale planting like rice paddies and things like that could be used to bring power to remote areas. So, man, I just think that is super-duper-duper cool. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, I got to talk about Google a little bit, too. A lot of people know that they have this Instant Translate app on Android. They're also going to be bringing it to the iOS systems for the first time ever. But this Instant Translated app has now gone through a pretty remarkable improvement. They used to have Google's Word Lens feature, and you had to use the camera. You had to take a picture of it, and then Google's Word Lens would look at the picture that you took and try and translate to language. But now they have real-time visual translation. It goes right through the camera and can actually look at menus, signs, other printed materials, things like that. So they're kind of up in the ante on this real-time translation thing. And on the secondary note, they're doing it verbally now as well. So you could actually take your Google app, put it on the table. If you were having a conversation, you do have to tell it what languages it's supposed to be listening for, but it will do French and Russian and German and things like that. But then you could have a real-time conversation, and you don't have to continually push the translate button, which is what you used to have to do before. Now you can just set it down and tell it what languages it's going to be listening for, and it will just go. I think that's pretty neat, because there's not anything I think that's going to bring the world together quicker and allow the transmission of interesting information more quickly than breaking down of language barriers, which is one of the things I was so excited when Skype announced that they were doing it just last month. They have real-time translation now. It's only for Spanish, but they are working on expanding that to other languages as well. So again, I think the language barrier is one of the major barriers to progress on the planet right now. So any type of technology that moves us towards that, I like to see it. A lot of health news right now. Want to recommend people check out this story. 10 reasons to stop drinking diet soda and chewing artificially sweetened gum. I didn't get an opportunity to get into this, but there are at a minimum of 10 reasons to stop drinking diet soda, and chewing aspirin, things like that. Also, the flu shot only effective in 23% of cases this year, but the CDC still wants you to go get one. So go do your duty. Get your CDC poison shot. Anyway, lots more news. Couldn't get to it. Go to redpillreports.com. Get into the show section. You'll be able to find all the articles I was about to get to. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Gary Milievsky. Keep it right here, guys.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest-growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as a sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
The wicked ones, obviously under heavy Masonic influence.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. A lot of news I couldn't get to. Please do go redpillreports.com and check out the show section. There's a lot of other things, especially in the health department there, that we should probably all be on top of right now. But I'm very excited to be moving into the second hour of our broadcast today, and it's always the second hour that we bring in the best guests in the world, and today is of no exception for sure. Bringing in a cybersecurity expert, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gary Milevsky, also the founder of Snoop Wall. You can find a link to Snoop Wall at redpillreports.com. He's also the sole inventor of the company's new technology. To say this gentleman is tech savvy would be an understatement, to say the least. He's also been extremely active in the InfoSec arena, most recently as the editor of Cyber Defense Magazine and the cover story author and regular contributor to Hack N9 magazine. Also founded NetClarity, which was an internal intrusion defense company based on patented technology that he invented. We're going to be talking quite a bit today about how to keep yourself safe. A lot of people getting a whole bunch of new gadgets and things like that for Christmas and eagerly just coming home and plugging them all right on into the computer with no real accounting for what might happen. And so Gary's always at the forefront of keeping us safe in terms of our electronic doodads and in terms of some of the threats that the hackers out there seem to be cultivating more and more as they and we all become more dependent on our technology. So Gary, first and foremost, let me welcome you to the program. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us once again on Red Pill Reports.
JD, it's an honor to be on your show.
Oh my gosh. You know, I tell you what, I'm really susceptible to flattery, Gary, so you don't want to go down that road with me.
No, I think you're doing a great job. Some of the guests are just amazing and great content. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we appreciate you being here. And again, this tech stuff, you know, I got this feeling that computers are going to be around for a while. So it probably behooves all of us to understand what their capabilities are and certainly what the capabilities are once they fall into the wrong hands. And so I kind of want to start there with you. A lot of people might not know that you've got a pretty extensive background with both Homeland Security and kind of in the anti-terror, counter-terror, cyber-terror arena. Will you talk a little bit about your background in that before we get moving on?
Well, that's a tiny piece of my background. I mean, most of my time since I was 12 years old and my dad was in the Navy, call me a Navy brat, I said, hey, Dad, I want to get a computer. And that's when computers were new. And I got a Timex Sinclair. So it all started with my Timex Sinclair, then my VIC-20, my Commodore 64, you name it. I've been writing code since I was a kid. And I've always been what you would call a white hat, you know, not a black hat.
Right.
I'd rather be a locksmith than a lock pick, you know, but you have to understand how the hackers do what they do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing my whole life. And from writing the code or inventing defensive technologies to protect banks or government networks to helping folks at the White House on a plan to secure cyberspace, which, you know, it was a good document, good ideas, but it hasn't been fully implemented. You probably have seen all the exploitation that continues to go on, where even our government is a victim beyond just Sony.
Right.
You know, so the idea here is, what can we do to reclaim our privacy, and what can we do to protect data in a new and innovative way? Because the hackers are always one step ahead of us.
Right. It does seem that way, especially these days. So what's really, you know, on the tip of your iceberg right now in terms of concerns? You know, what kind of advice would you have for listeners going forward into 2015?
Well, I'm calling 2015 the year of the rat. Now, you know, the Chinese calendar, I think it says this is the year of the sheep.
Okay.
And you and I would rather take the red pill than the blue pill, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to be a sheeple, and I don't want to be a victim. So let's understand what a rat is. It's a remote access Trojan. 95% of successful exploitation is through intelligent, we call it spear phishing attacks. It can now be through SMS messages that you might get on your phone, as well as apps that people install. So we're either going to get exploited through apps we've installed and trust without really validating or verifying who made it, where they came from, what they do, or we're going to get a rat, which is like an app, installed on our smartphone, our tablet, our computer, mm-hmm. without really understanding how it happened. And that rat will eavesdrop on us. It's a remote access Trojan. We're talking about knowing everything you say and do, turning on your microphone, turning on your webcam, eavesdropping on you, collecting data on you. That's how Sony was exploited, through a rat. And that's, you know, that's why I think we need to understand what rats are and how they get into our devices. And then let's be smarter about cleaning them up and getting rid of them.
Right. Well, I want to talk about, I mean, you just mentioned the fact that you could get one through an SMS. That's startling to me. I didn't have any idea that that could happen. How does that work?
Oh, that's a very popular way. You get an SMS message that says, JD, here's, you know, it could either be intelligently done spear phishing. Hey, JD, here's Gary's bio, and it looks like it came from my phone
right.
for you for, you know, today's show, let's say, and you open up the file, and it looks like a normal PDF, but really malware got installed. And then the PDF opened up, and you didn't know that malware was being installed. You just thought it was a link or an attachment to a file.
Okay. So it's not necessarily the text message itself. It's the fact that people will send you unsolicited attachments in a text message, and that's where the susceptibility comes in.
Yes, and it's really a hyperlink that your browser then, your SMS can't open up an attachment or, you know, a hyperlink, but your browser will in your phone or your tablet, and next thing you know, you're infected.
Is that what happened in South Korea at the nuclear plants there, in your opinion?
Could be. I mean, I do believe that it all starts with reconnaissance and understanding the network. And right now today, if you were to look at map.ipviking.com, which is the real-time threat report of attacks around the globe.
Scariest website on the internet as far as I'm concerned, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that email servers are getting hit day and night in St. Louis.
Right.
And their email servers, I don't know if they're GoDaddy's or if they're 1&1's or whoever's they are, but the best thing to do if you're a cyber criminal is get inside people's email behavior or what they're sending back and forth or who they're communicating with so that you can spearfish them, so you can send them a very intelligent email with a fake header that looks like it came from the person they trust. So that most likely is how you would go after that nuclear facility in South Korea, or anybody, is send them an email, and they don't read the actual mail delivery and tracking info and all the network, you know, SMTP protocol stuff.
Right.
They just open the email and it looks like it came from someone they trust. That's what's going on, and that's big.
Okay. So how do we protect ourselves against that other than just being cognizant of it?
You want my secret sauce?
Yeah, I want the secret sauce. That's why you're here.
So for your listeners, it's so simple, they're not going to believe it. Only use an email client in text rendering mode from now on.
Okay, explain that, because I, you know, I run Linux. I don't have any idea what you're talking about, man.
Oh, good news. If you go to Wikipedia and type in email clients, they list in Wikipedia those that are text only and those that are HTML rendering for Linux and Windows, etc. For example, if you use Outlook on Windows or you use some open source mail client on Linux, most likely, you know, like from the Mozilla Foundation, mm-hmm. most likely by default, it renders picture files and HTML. If we just say, I only want to receive emails where I can only read them in text mode only, those are just ASCII text characters, like, you know, Notepad that people might open in Windows and type a note, it's not as rich as a display and text environment as Word. It's not as rich with pictures and links and code as, you know, Internet Explorer or Chrome or Mozilla, et cetera, or Firefox. But as a result, it's harder to infect. You can't get infected if you're not allowing email tracking and wrap attachments to show up. All you're doing is reading the message that they sent you.
Okay. So the threat then exists in the HTML language. Am I picking up on that correctly?
Yes, that's part of the problem. Okay. The phishing attacks on phones is an HTML link, and that can come through SMS or email. The phishing attacks on Linux, Windows, Macintosh are usually done by attacking the fact that your email client will render the HTML, which is a language. So you're running computer code, not knowing it, versus just reading the email that the person sent you.
Okay. What about somebody using like a NoScript plug in Firefox or Mozilla or any of that stuff? Does that do anything for us?
That would be helpful. But just to give you an example of email tracking cookies and what's called web beacons or web bugs, they can come in the form of a one-pixel graphic file that, once you render the white-on-white pixel, it's called a tracking pixel. Right. You know, it used to be big business for email companies and for public corporations. Now you can go into dozens of websites and type in free email tracking service, and they will generate the email that allows you to make someone a victim, geolocate them when they open the email, see how long they were reading the email, see if they opened the attachment, see if they forwarded the email to anyone, see if they clicked on a hyperlink, what kind of web browser or email client they're running, and what their operating system is. And this is all free nowadays.
Wow. I mean, that's like a smorgasbord of vulnerability opportunities there, just kind of being presented to you if you know anything about, you know, Metasploit. You could take that information and go right into Metasploit and ruin someone's life pretty easily.
That's how spear phishing and reconnaissance works, to really dig into someone's computer and to steal information and find their vulnerabilities. It's fingerprinting, right? Mm-hmm. So the mail clients is a huge vulnerability we need to start to close. And JD, the easiest way to close it is, if you're running Linux, pick an email client that allows you to say, only render my email in text-only mode.
Okay. Well, there you go. Important safety tip, ladies and gentlemen. I'm taking notes, so if I fall off for a second, it's just because I'm writing all this important stuff down. But I think that's a very important key. What else is on your radar right now in terms of threats that people need to be aware of, Gary?
Well, again, as I say, it's the year of the rat. I did a threat report at Snoopwall. And we have a whole new consumer area with tips and reports and tools. Everything's free for consumers at Snoopwall. And one of my reports is the year of the rat. And really, once you understand that you're getting a spear phishing attack, what is a rat, right? What is a remote access Trojan? How did this criminal punk spy on Miss Teen USA, Cassidy Wolf?
Right.
Could have been our teenage daughter.
So is there anything that you can do once you've already gotten a rat, or if you suspect that you've got a rat on your computer, to fight back?
Now you're asking the right question. The answer is yes. You can get rid of rats, and let's start with phones and tablets. The first thing you can do, JD, how many apps do you have installed on your smartphone?
Well, you've asked me this before. I'm one of those guys that roots my phone. So I've got a Samsung Galaxy, but it's not connected to a network of any type. And I don't have any apps that came with my Samsung. So very, very few, I guess, would be the answer to that. But most people have quite a few apps. You know, they just download them all the time.
So remember that host you used to work with on another show? She told me she doesn't have a smartphone on purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's probably true.
Yeah, and so most people do have a smartphone or a tablet, and they've got 20 to 50 apps, and many of these free apps are remote access Trojans.
Right.
So what I recommend, there's two things you can do to deal with a rat. One is a spring cleaning. Delete all the apps that you don't use every day. Mm-hmm. Then look at the 3 or 4 or 5 apps that you do use every day. And then go to the Play Store or the iTunes Store and then click on privacy, read their privacy policy if they have one. Click on permissions and see what permissions that app you have is using. If the app is using too many permissions, then get rid of it. You know, why does a flashlight need to geolocate me? Why does a Bible app need to connect to a server in Russia and it's an English Bible? I don't get it. Right. It's probably a rat.
So then, are there some that you're not going to be able to get rid of as easily as others? I mean, are there any things that are installed from the factory? I know for me, I had to root my phone to kind of get down underneath the AT&T layer so I could really get into the nitty-gritty stuff and get rid of all the extra garbage that they put on there. But I'm wondering is it just as easy as that, just to locate the app that you don't think is working for your, you know, in your favor and then just removing it? Or are there apps out there that are prepared for that contingency, Gary?
Well, we have something called Privacy App. John McAfee has something called Decentral. You can scan your smartphone to see if you've got apps that eavesdrop on you.
Okay.
And we give them a privacy grade and you'll notice their behavior and then say, oh, I think I want to uninstall these. Ultimately, you have to uninstall them. You have to get rid of them and replace them with better apps that are safer and easier to use. The second thing you can do, let's say you give your kids a tablet and they start playing games. Even Disney's games, some of them seem to want to use the microphone and other things. Why not disable the microphone, disable the webcam, and disable any form of internet access on a smartphone or a tablet while your kids are playing games? There's no way a rat can spy on them. There's no way a cyber criminal or an online predator or pedophile can geolocate them if there's no internet access. If there is internet access and the app wants to, some of these apps or rats will check the GPS and see where they are at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. But if there's no internet, then they're not going to collect and send that data over the internet to the person remotely spying on you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So you can go in independently then and eliminate your Wi-Fi connection on your phone before you're giving that stuff to your kids. Are there services out there that can like lock down a phone of all of those aspects? Is there another, like a separate app that I could say, like a parental control app that will essentially, you know, make my phone a brick other than the game that my kids are playing? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we have an experimental one that we made at Snoopall. We're not done with it, but it's hard because each phone is a little different. The hardware ports are controlled a little differently. Apple, by the way, on iPhones and iPads, you can go on a granular level and say, you know what, I don't want this app to geolocate, no location services. So there are some tools out there, but it's a little bit challenging. I was just having a chat with the folks at Blackphone, and, you know, they claim that if you buy their $700 phone, nobody will ever spy on you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's expensive, but maybe it's worth $700 to reclaim your privacy. I haven't looked into it in detail, though.
Is that the one that BlackBerry developed with DARPA that's supposed to be self-destructible, or like if you get inside it and start tampering with it, it's going to eliminate all, it'll wipe itself and things like that?
No, this is the group Silent Circle and Redphone open source groups got together. They started a company, I think, in Switzerland, and they formed Blackphone.
Wow, I've never even heard of that. And that's supposed to be like a super secure, everything encrypted, no type of app access to internet sort of deal or what?
Yeah, the only problem is if you want to have a crypto call, a private call between you and me, you know, Phil Zimmerman made Z-Phone, an open source encrypted VoIP system. But if you and I wanted to have a private chat on the Blackphone, you'd have to have a Blackphone and I'd have to have a Blackphone.
Ah, okay. So it's mostly for like military contractors and things like that they're going to dish them out to agents. I want one. I'll tell you what. I think that would be, I'd probably move back into the smart world market if I could find one that I knew wasn't going to be eavesdropped, you know, on every single situation. But how would a phone like that be protected from the NSA flying around with a Stingray and a Cessna, you know?
Well, exactly. Look, there's no way without changing behavior and changing laws from Congress to three-letter agencies to stop them from doing what they do. We're all getting spied on. We're all getting eavesdropped. It's a fact. And some people get mad at me when I say, look, I'm more worried about predators and pedophiles and cyber criminals than I am about our government. But the reason is I'm not, you know, I can't stop the NSA from eavesdropping on this Skype conversation.
Right.
I can't do it, you know, and if I did do it, I'd get a knock on my door.
Right. Well, I mean, do you think that I was thinking about the Charlie Hebdo thing, and it seems like we are going to see that situation be exploited, and a major, major crackdown on encryption, I think, seems to be coming down the pike. So are we kind of backed into a corner at this point? I mean, are we going to be at a point soon where there will be no private, secure communication left on the planet, Gary?
I think the good news is I think it's a joke that including what the I think the British fellow
Cameron,
said, it's a joke. You can, look, do computer CPUs process math equations? Yes. Will they always be able to? Yes.
Right.
Then you can create encryption anytime you want in any unique way. Encryption will only continue to expand in its capabilities. And that's when agencies knock on people's doors and say, we'd like the keys, right? But the bottom line is you can never get rid of encryption. Just look at the Bitcoin. The Bitcoin is the world's first countervalence encrypted currency.
Mm-hmm. And look what's happening to Ross Ulbricht now for trying to, you know, just have a website to allow people to use it. You know, I mean, the crackdown is happening.
Yeah, but you know what? It's like firefighting. You can't put out all the fires. Humanity has a right to privacy. It's a sovereign thing. I don't want to be sitting in the bathroom knowing that if I'm playing with a tablet, someone's seeing me on the toilet. That's none of their business.
Right.
There's got to be a place to reclaim your privacy. That's why I started Snoopall. There's certain places in our lives that we want privacy. It's up to you and me, JD, to decide how much privacy we want and what conveniences we're willing to give up for. Did we talk about the Amazon Echo?
I think we've talked about it a little bit, but I think last time you were here, it had just come out and we hadn't really broached it too much. So maybe it'd be a good opportunity right now to talk about that. I'm sure a couple people probably got them for Christmas and are sitting there staring at them right now going, what is this guy talking about my Echo for?
Yeah. Yeah. And Amazon's hearing the conversation too, by the way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the Amazon Echo device is a 1984 Orwellian device. It's beautiful. The commercial's amazing. Hey, kids, look at what Dad bought. The Echo. It does everything. Really? Yes, just by listening in on our conversations and having GPS and Wi-Fi and a microphone, you know, that can hear you across the whole house, you know, three rooms away. You just talk to the Echo and it listens and it gets you answers and information, and Echo is your friend. Is that creepy or what?
It's so creepy. I can't even imagine having one in my house. But, you know, I always have to wonder if there's already one in my house that I don't know of. You know what I mean?
Could it be the smart the power grid, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question. Or my refrigerator that's supposedly talking to my credit cards to let my credit card know when I'm out of milk. So when I walk through the store, my credit card will beep. You know what I mean? Like, we're just delving into this completely controlled electronic grid of supposed convenience, but man, I'll tell you what, I don't want to be tracked and monitored, and I don't want to be in 1984, but it seems like that's the direction we're going in, Gary.
It is. And so, you know, I tell people, if you want to reclaim your privacy, you have to study and learn about countervalence, which is to counter surveillance, because you're always being surveyed. And, you know, up here in New Hampshire, for example, the state passed a law against the OCR, optical character recognition, and cameras eavesdropping on people's cars as they drive by lights and go through toll booths, and police cars can no longer have those to, you know, learn about you and your car without having pulled you over.
Right.
So that's illegal in this state, but many other states have allowed that to happen. It's really, again, up to you to decide how much of your privacy you're willing to give up for maybe convenience.
Mm-hmm. Well, and too, you know, getting on to law enforcement real quick, there was a story, I think Melissa Melton broke it last week, about that system. It's called Beware, and it's a system that they're selling to law enforcement agencies across the country that allows them real-time access to your public records and your social media sites and things like that. So what would happen would be a police officer would pull you over, log into the Beware system, and then it would go through and aggregate, you know, billions of hits on all of your social media sites and say, well, this guy said at one point 6 months ago that he thought police officers weren't that great. So we're going to give him a threat level assessment red, and I want you to exhibit extreme caution when you when you come up to this vehicle. So you have to be aware too that it's not just the companies that want to aggregate information about you so that they can sell advertising to other companies, but it's all of that information is being used to create some kind of psychological profile of who you are, and that's part of the you becoming a product motif that we're seeing kind of unveiling around the country right now.
I have a funny little story about that, but you're reminding me of that movie with the precogs, right?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I received a package in the mail, and I've been talking a lot about the Sony breach, and out of the blue, it said, "Thank you for your purchase from Amazon. Nothing to envy. Ordinary Lives in North Korea by Barbara Demick, a nationally awarded book all about North Korea." And I've been doing a lot of talking on radio and TV about the breach of Sony.
Right.
I never ordered this book. So I'm thinking, oh no, Amazon's already figuring out what I'm going to buy next. Luckily, and I really thought this was Amazon kicking in that program Bezos talked about where the drone flies up to your house, drops off a book, you get pre-charged on your credit card because they assume that's the next thing you're going to want to own. And, imagine 9 out of 10 people don't return the book and keep it because, I was just thinking about buying that.
Wow. I mean, are they really working on that program?
They are working on it, but luckily someone sent this to me as a gift.
Oh, good.
a few days later. But, the invoice or, the packing slip was thanking me for the order. It didn't have that person's name on it. So here I am thinking, whoa, I didn't order this. Am I a victim of identity theft?
Right.
Did somebody get mad at me about my talking about North Korea? What's going on? A couple days later, a friend sends me an email and goes, how do you like that book I sent you? I heard you on the radio talking about Sony. But, that's the kind of stuff that's heading our way. Jeff Bezos wants to do that. And Amazon Prime, very interesting. On Wall Street, they talk about Amazon losing money on creating their version of Netflix. Do you know why Amazon wants you to sign up to watch the streaming movies?
No, uh-uh.
Because when you spend whatever it is, $100 to become an Amazon Prime member, they will start to collect analytics on you. And most people who sign up for it will spend money shopping for all these things they would have bought at a local retailer.
Okay.
So the bait and switch is join Prime, watch some movies. Next thing you know, you're a customer for life and you'll never leave your house. And we're just going to drone ship everything to you one day. And you'll just sit there on the couch and everything you want will arrive, including things you never ordered yet because we used our precog on you.
Right. But think of all the benefits to all the producers of goods out there that, if Amazon knows what TV shows they're showing you and knows what product placements are going to be in there, we're really going to tighten that gap on what they want to sell you and how to get it in front of you. I can't see that as being a bad thing, Gary. Can you really? I mean, come on.
Well, it's funny because I was wondering why the new LG and Samsung smart TVs privacy policies state that the microphone don't say anything you would consider.
We got to go to break.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking iodine now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the MicroPlant Powder family. MicroPlant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HIPUSA.org.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Seed Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tatler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com. For emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
The brother's gonna work it out.
Staunching Tyranny with Jim and Jeff Staunch.
Monday on Truth Frequency Radio.
With us through that 3-minute break. We're moving into the final segment of our second hour with our very special guest, Mr. Gary Milievsky. And for those of you who don't know, Gary Milievsky is the founder of Snoopwall. And I want to talk about Snoopwall for just a few minutes. We've been talking quite a bit about some of the threats that might be coming down the pike in terms of hackers affecting your equipment, listeners, you guys at home, your phones, things like that. But I want to talk about Snoopwall.com for just a second. Gary, if you would talk a little bit about the technology that is Snoopwall and maybe talk a little bit about some of the offerings that are there at that site that people might want to take advantage of.
JD, thanks for the opportunity to talk about Snoopwall.
Sure.
We make our money by helping banks harden their mobile ATM experience for consumers. And in return, my way of paying it forward, licensing our technology to banks through a development toolkit for Android, Apple, and Windows, is that we kind of redirect some of our revenues towards creating free things for consumers. We have tools, apps, tips, advisories, reports, and you know, some of our reports will help you handle hacking on the holidays or any time on hardening your phone or your computer. We have advisories every day about, you know, who's been breached, how they were breached, whatever information we can share. And we've got some free apps. Some of the apps include an open source flashlight app. I kind of broke the story wide open on flashlights spying on people. And I think you would agree with me that there is some cognitive dissonance out there.
Yes.
Sometimes it's hard to wake people up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the flashlight is free and open source. And just this week I've had people go, you know, I did a Brett Baer report in it with Brett, and it was it's had almost 4 million views, and people say, is this guy for real? And then people will go, oh, no, he's just touting his flashlight app because he wants to make a lot of money with it. Okay, it's free. It's open source. Even if we get a million downloads, there's you don't make up revenue on zero in volume.
That's true. That's a good point. I'm not great at math, but I know a million times zero is still zero. So, yeah.
So the flashlight's free and open source code so people can see how would you write a tiny flashlight that doesn't spy on you. Our flashlight totally compiled on Android and Apple and Windows Phone, total compiled file size under 100 kilobytes. The average top 10 flashlight file size is 5 megabytes.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? Is that big of a difference?
Big difference. You got to wonder what's in there.
Some you, people, don't you?
Yeah, some people will say, well, it's a bigger compile because they got to make up the money with, you know, sometimes popping up some, you know, some ads. No big deal that they're popping up ads. What if the flashlight attacks your GPS, your Wi-Fi, sends packets to other countries, looks at your contact list, steals pictures, turns on your microphone and webcam? I think you got a piece of malware. I think you got a rat on your phone. If you have
barely, you barely have a flashlight at that point, really. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I would rather go to the hardware store.
Yes. Yeah.
So we made that open source flashlight, and you know, if people want it, great. If they don't, that's okay. But I just wanted to prove to the world how big an app really needs to be to not spy on you and actually do the function that they claim it's going to do.
So it was mostly an exercise in just proving how bad all the other flashlight ads or apps are out there, essentially, right?
Yeah, and we've actually had almost 500,000 downloads because people love it, saying this thing doesn't spy on me.
Yeah.
Now, in the Google store, if you look at the privacy flashlight, the one thing that some people complain about is it says this uses camera and microphone. Well, the Google function call or API to talk to the flashlight to turn on the LED requires you make a call to the camera engine or camera code. Okay. We don't use the microphone. We don't use the camera. We just use the LED. And in fact, if you read source code, you'll see because it's open source, go to GitHub and download our source code, that's all we do. But people are so paranoid. And then the other thing they don't think about is we don't have any network connectivity in our app. And you can see that in Google and Apple and Microsoft's privacy settings telling you, hey, when they compiled and uploaded the app to us, this is what it does. There's no internet access. It's not spyware, and it's open source. And yet, JD, I still every day hear from my support team that people are complaining and that we probably are trying to make money off of a free app.
Well, you got to think, too, you guys have to pay for the infrastructure. I mean, you're heating and cooling the computers that are in the servers that are dishing out that app. So really, effectively, if you really wanted to break it down into like a cost-benefit analysis, it's costing you guys money to provide that because you're paying for your website. You're paying to make sure that the continuity of it stays good, right? I mean,
yeah, and we even take the complaints seriously, and we've enhanced the flashlight app. I've had to redirect engineering resources to do some cool things like put a timer on it, and people say, oh, I'll give you 5 stars if you do this. I want people to look at our technology and say these guys are great, and I don't mind spending the money to help people and do good.
Right.
You know, hopefully paying it forward is a good thing, but it's funny because you rarely get the pat on the back. You usually get the, well, there's got to be an agenda. There's this thing's spying on me. Read the source code. It's not spying on you.
What is it written in, just for anybody out there who might actually take you up on that offer?
Sure. If you go to the GitHub, you go to snoopwall.com/open-source, you'll be able to click the link, go to the site, and see what language it's written in on each platform. It's a slightly different derivative of C on each platform.
Okay. So anybody out there is, you know, wants to double check that for themselves and speaks in C, you can go check that out for yourselves. I want to just remind everybody that the chat room is open. If you have questions or concerns, comments for Gary, we're looking at that right now. And also, I want to go ahead and open up the phone lines just in case there's anybody that would like to call in with a question or a comment. That number is 866-37-TRUTH. Also 866-378-7884. We've got a little bit of time left, and I want to make sure if anybody has questions out there that you get those on the table. Gary, we just went through the holiday season, all right? And a lot of people probably bought a lot of goodies that they came home and promptly plugged right into their computers. Is there anything in terms of the gift market that you became aware of, say, in the last month or so, new devices or things like that that might be inherently not good that we should be aware of?
A lot of folks bought under $100 tablets for their kids. Most of them are made in China, and many of them come with pre-configured apps that are, you know, loaded with free apps that, in my mind, are spyware, rats, Trojans, creepware.
Right.
And again, it all gets back to what are you going to let your kids use? And even if the tablet wants to spy on your children, you can turn off the hardware ports and you can block the app's access to Wi-Fi or the internet so that they can still play the game. Even a game that has creepware embedded in it to spy on you, whether it's to monetize you through ads or whether it's to really do some nasty things, maybe even steal your identity, you can still kind of neuter it by blocking its access to the internet. So that's kind of what I'm seeing, is a lot of folks are getting cheap tablets. QVC and others, Home Shopping, had a lot of cheap tablets, and they came loaded with lots of free games and free, you know, free utilities. That nothing's really free in this world.
Right. Well, unless it's Snoopwall, right?
Well, I still, you know, I would say that I don't mind if we help people and we get positive press from that. That's, you know, paying it forward and getting something in return.
Yeah.
Or at least a pat on the back. Thanks for the flashlight. By the way, we also have a privacy app, which is a scanner to scan your smartphone or your Windows and to show you what of those apps might be spying on you. Privacy app is completely free.
Would that work on these under $100 Chinese tablets also?
Yes. In fact, in our lab, we run privacy app on these tablets to see what kind of junk people are getting.
Right. Okay, that's awesome. What about other simple stuff like USB devices? I know there was a big article about e-cigarettes recently. Still a lot of concern surrounding that kind of stuff.
Why does an e-cigarette have mass storage on it?
What do you mean, why does it? What are you talking about? Why wouldn't it need storage? You know?
Well, if you have an e-cigarette and you plug it into a USB charger and you happen to decide to plug it into your computer instead of the wall outlet, you can get infected with many of the new e-cigarettes because they're manufactured in China. And, you know, I'm not picking on the Chinese government, but they love to put malware on USB mass storage.
What is that? Why is that? It seems like every time we have a discussion or any type of threat that's coming down here, China seems to be at the helm. Why is China so interested in what we're doing with our e-cigarettes?
Well, I've been to China. It's a beautiful country, great people. It's not as much communist as they say it is anymore. It's kind of a wild, wild west of businesses and, you know, corruption and people kind of bribing their way through doing deals with the government.
Okay.
And that's kind of their culture. But their government, so, you know, they're a frenemy of the U.S. They're friends with us, yet they're friends with folks that might not like us very much,
right.
Like North Korea and others. So we have an odd relationship with China. And the Chinese government loves to collect data, and they love to eavesdrop, and they love to, for example, if you go to a hotel in China, any hotel, and you're an American, your laptop hard drive is duplicated while you're walking around Beijing.
What? What are you talking about?
It's in the news. Absolutely. The same tools our FBI uses on forensic analysis of hard drives. The cleaning person in that hotel room is demanded to do that.
Wait, okay, hang on a second. So you're telling me that if I'm on vacation in China and I leave my laptop in my hotel room, that the cleaning person is going to come in and plug something in and duplicate my laptop, much the same way that the FBI or the NSA would?
Yes. You need to pretend you're at DEFCON or Black Hat when you visit China.
Wow.
It's a burner phone and a burner laptop, man. That's what you got to bring. But other than that, so you got to understand their culture. I mean, if they can get the B-3 bomber, you know, let's say there's a new design from the U.S. government for the next stealth bomber, they'd love to have a copy of those designs. It saves them a lot of R&D time.
Right. So, okay, so really it's targeting of, it's not necessarily like an identity theft sort of attack. It's just to network, figure out who you know, and figure out where they can get juicy bits of information from then, you think?
Yes, and if you blanket everyone on their smartphones and tablets, one of the apps I noticed looks at your contact list and looks at who's on your calendar. What if on your calendar were some, you know, four-star general?
Right.
Maybe they would turn on the eavesdropping on both of you.
Right. And be able to do it at a targeted time when they knew you were going to be in a meeting. Wow.
Exactly. And by the way, that's what some of the malware that we've discovered does on smartphones.
Well, I think people really don't have a good handle on the idea that a smartphone is barely a phone anymore. I mean, you're talking about a pretty hefty piece of technology. I mean, thinking about the technology that they sent up to the moon, if you believe that we went to the moon, being, you know, like essentially an old Nokia, you know, in terms of technology. Now everybody's walking around with essentially a supercomputer in their pocket that just happens to have a phone app on it. And I think people really don't understand the total capability of these little tiny machines that we're walking around with, Gary.
If this were 30 years ago, people would think that our phones came from Area 51.
Right? I mean, seriously, that's not an understatement.
Yeah, the technology is incredible. And the phones have two operating systems. That's one thing most people don't know.
Okay. Do you want to extrapolate on that for a second?
Yeah. So inside your phone is an operating system that allows your phone to constantly pull cellular towers and look for LTE or 4G and maybe drop down to 3G, or as we've learned with some of these NSA honeypots, dropping down to 2G on a fake cell tower. That's a good way to block encryption. You can't do encryption over 2G. Hmm. But ultimately, cell phones have two operating systems. One you and I never see, and then the one we see that allows us to play games and, you know, use a calculator or calendar or email or Facebook or Twitter. And that other operating system we'll never have access to.
Even if you root your phones, you're not getting access to that other one?
Not really. You can collect a little data if you've rooted your phone out of that. And that's actually been used to detect fake cell towers by rooting and also tracking if your phone's trying to drop down to 2G. But that OS is its own little OS in there. You and I don't have much say over it.
Wow. So I guess I'd have to get into some pretty serious programming language. I just think, man, I would really like to dig into my phone and to turn it into some kind of like super powerful little hacker machine. But I haven't been able to figure out how to do that yet.
There is a project out there, I think it's on Kickstarter, a completely open source hardware and software environment. It might be a laptop or something, but if you have a completely open source environment, that means the source code to the hardware, the source code to the software, everything's available and freely open, then you can know what's really happening. Otherwise, you have to take one of my number one tips for stopping hackers during the holidays off of my halting hackers tip sheet. Assume you've already been compromised.
Right.
So if we start with the assumption we're already compromised, what can we do, JD, to start to reclaim our privacy?
Well, house cleaning, spring cleaning, right, being the first thing. I'd go to Snoopwall and I'd use your app to try and detect what is on my phone already, obviously, right?
Exactly. And then also, why do you need wireless and geolocation services on all the time? It sucks up your battery. Up to proximity attacks at the airport or the hotel or the coffee shop. Why do you need iBeacon or Bluetooth or NFC on all the time, depending on iPhone or Android or Windows Phone? You don't.
Right. You know, another tip that I would give too, I'm sure, I don't know if you are aware of the little device that's out there. It's called a Pineapple. It was made by Hack5. You can buy them for about $100, but I guess you'd want to call it like a fake Wi-Fi. So what you would do is you take this little pineapple, and a lot of people don't know this about their phones, which is why I'm bringing this up. You could take that pineapple to a bar or wherever, and then somebody comes in, they've got their smartphone on, where your smartphone, like Gary was just talking about, is constantly sending out signals. And one of the signals that it's sending out is a request for any of the Wi-Fi networks that it's ever been associated with. Because a lot of people, when they associate with a new Wi-Fi network, you go to your job or you go to the library or whatever, it'll ask you if you want to remember that connection. Most people just hit, yep, you know, remember it. But the problem is that request keeps coming out of your phone every time you go anywhere. So some random Wi-Fi connection that you made 2 years ago is still potentially on your phone. So there are hackers out there with little devices like the Pineapple that when you walk into the bar, wherever they're at, and your phone says, hey, is that connection that I was connected to 2 years ago still available? Well, the Pineapple will say, heck yeah, it is, buddy. I'm right here. Long time no see. Connect on away. And so cleaning up that list, Gary, doesn't that seem to be a pretty important note to make?
Absolutely. And with the Pineapple and other tools like it, you know, they come with AirCrack or right. Kitsmid or some of these other tools. The key thing that they do most of the time is to do a what they call an evil AP, a fake access point. And I could tell you a funny, embarrassing story as in the news lately.
Mm-hmm.
So years ago, I went to France to speak at Hack in Paris conference.
Okay.
And it was really interesting. They had different government cyber hackers clank capture the flag against each other. The U.S. versus Russia versus China versus France. And everyone was out to get each other. And it was kind of, it was fun to be there. The moment I arrived there and I booted, of course, it's a laptop that whenever I go to a hacking conference, I don't have anything important on it. I'm always going to wipe it anyway. But the moment I booted the laptop just to bring up a browser, the orange for the hotel was being kind of broadcast by an evil access point, kind of like your pineapple, where it says, no, I'm orange. Gary's laptop should connect to me. The first page that came up in my browser, what do you think it was?
I have no idea.
A French gay porn site. And the hackers in the room were cracking up laughing, going, ah, ha, ha, we've hacked one of the guest speakers.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's kind of just playing around being goofy, and they thought it was fun. And how do you do it? The same way the pineapple does. You broadcast that you're the Starbucks wireless router.
Right.
Or your Orange Telecom in France. And then someone nearby, their device connects to the closest of that name, the trusted name that you think you trust, and you find out it's not, and then they do a browser hijack or browser injection. Mm-hmm.
And then they've got unfettered access to everything on your machine.
That's why, like I said, whenever I go to these security shows, it's like going to China. It has to be nothing important on the device, and you have to assume that it's infected when you leave.
Wow. Huh. Well, okay, so then let's talk a little bit about how to protect yourself here, how to harden your own computer systems here, how to protect your phones while we're here in this country, because I still think a lot of us that are listening, we're all here in America and don't have to necessarily worry about having a burner device, or do we? Should we kind of start carrying that same motif over into our day-to-day activities here in America?
Why not? You know, countervailance to counter being surveyed or spied upon surveillance means, to reclaim your privacy, means that you should use encryption. You should assume things are getting compromised, so you need to clean things up. There's a website called NVD, National Vulnerability Database, .NIST, NIST.gov. I'm on the advisory board to that group, and it's the National Vulnerability Database, and you can search the hardware or software that you're running and see if it has a currently known vulnerability that's going to be exploited by a hacker or by malware.
Well, that seems like a pretty good place to start then, huh?
Yeah, if you have a vulnerable wireless router, get the patch, fix it. If you have a vulnerable browser, if there isn't a patch, switch browsers. You can find out how vulnerable you are by searching the National Vulnerability Database with the kinds of equipment that you're running. And there's even some free vulnerability scanning tools out there that you can trust by digging in a little more deeper at cve.mitre.org, Common Vulnerability and Exposure, cve.mitre.org, and look at the tools that help you do scanning for vulnerabilities. Then you'll start to harden your computer, and you can make the risk of being exploited much lower.
I like it. I like it. That's what we try and do here. We want to keep people safe. Gary, since you are also involved with the kind of the national cybersecurity, you know, motif and things like that, what's the big threat that people behind the scenes are paying attention to right now in terms of cybersecurity? Is it still, you know, network going down? Do you think is it the Wall Street targeted, or do you think, you know, power grid type stuff? What is the main concern when you go back to these groups to start talking about, you know, national level concerns?
Well, it's always about critical infrastructure, and it keeps ringing louder lately,
right,
such as, will our power grid be infected by an enemy nation state or a rogue nation? Will the power grid go down? Will a train, you know, be swapped from one track to another when it shouldn't?
Right.
Could a cyber terrorist attack cause physical harm? The answer is yes and no. In many cases, it could cause physical harm if they were to get into what we call SCADA systems,
right,
that are starting to get connected to the internet. But, for example, with Amtrak and others, many years ago I met folks at the White House who decided to, we talked with folks like Amtrak, decided to actually use some gaming protocols. Have you heard of collision detection in video games?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Well, now they have that built into the train system so that two trains won't collide, even if hackers were to hack in and try to make a train swap a track.
Interesting.
So that's good news on the train system, but what about all the other critical infrastructure from airports? And some hackers talked about hacking into the Wi-Fi on airplanes. The airplanes have firewalled off and set separate networks. You know, it's kind of a private LAN to the satellite dish to get the internet off of an airplane. Okay. I think we'll be safe there. But the power grid is probably the most critical infrastructure. And as you saw, South Korea was attacked They claimed it couldn't cause damage, but you know about Stuxnet, the worm that we used, that we sent to Iran, that could have caused a Fukushima event on their nuclear facility.
Well, and didn't Germany just get hit? One of their, I think it was like an iron plant or a steel plant in Germany, got hit pretty hard by some sort of Stuxnet-style attack just recently.
Yeah, I didn't. The way they would do it is something that controls heat or mechanical devices.
Right.
And like you said earlier, you know, you don't want your refrigerator doing the wrong thing. A couple German hackers were able to hack it during one of these shows, like a Black Hat, hack into a refrigerator in someone's house in America and prove that they got into a refrigerator and changed settings remotely.
Wow. Well, I suppose that's not the most frightening threat on the horizon right now, you know, having somebody hack in and spoil all your food. Although it'd probably be fun for recently divorced people out there who maybe, you know, are having some kind of marital issues. You could really mess with each other that way. Anyways, getting back on track. I really appreciate you showing up today, Gary Milevsky. I realize that you've got to take time away from your schedule to join us, and I really do appreciate you showing up today. And I want to highly recommend everybody go check out snoopwall.com. It sounds like there are a lot of fantastic apps there for people to use. Is there anything else you want to leave us with today before we're out of time, Gary?
Well, you did ask me about the Amazon Echo.
And I did.
And I never really got into the detail, but standing just 9 inches tall, your far-field microphone friend, you know, with built-in voice recognition technology, hears everything you say and do, even if the music is playing, no matter where you are. Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, all built in. The question is, what is it listening to, and what's it doing with all that data? Because it has a automatic cloud connectivity to Amazon in real time. What is the Echo doing?
I don't know. I wonder, too, how long the Kindle, it will be until the Kindle app has all of the same capabilities and that your, you know, until your smartphone will just become the Echo. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So my point is, if you want to have fun tools and get that new smart TV, do you really want to have a microphone and or webcam built into something with constant internet access and a privacy policy that's scary? Read the policy before you buy the device. Do some research because you're going to lose your privacy in return for convenience.
I think somebody said something about that once, too. I don't remember who it was. I think he was a pretty smart guy talking about those people who might trade security for liberty, not deserving either. Something along those lines. It probably wasn't really that important, though, don't you think? I mean, you know.
You and Ben Franklin, you're just playing with me.
Yeah. Probably not that important. Anyway, Gary Milevsky, we are just about out of time today, so thank you again for being with us on the program. Look forward to speaking with you again in the future, sir.
Thank you, JD. And, work hard to reclaim your privacy. It's your right. You deserve.
I agree. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, we are constantly under threat. And those of you guys who don't understand just how capable the hackers are today at cultivating information about you and about, you know, putting things onto your phone and your computer that are malicious, go to Snoopwall. Use the apps there. Check your stuff. Make sure that you're not sending all your information to, you know, an identity theft overseas, because it can happen if that's what they're trying to do. Anyways, good luck over the weekend, guys. I hope that you guys have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy some weather. Remember, there's only 2 days you can't do anything ever. They are yesterday and tomorrow. So to make today a good day, guys, we'll be back Monday live like we always are. Dr. Harris will be on the show, so it'll be a very fascinating discussion about health and some of the pending changes to the FDA. So everybody take care, have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you guys on Monday. See you guys.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information. Without the hate, hype, and fear, we are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call in to your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.